Family, friends, people of all nations, welcome to another edition of the show that I, your host, David Woodruff, affectionately refer to as the Woodruff Report. A special Sunday edition, so I'm sorry if I kept y'all waiting for too long, but I think I can make up for any wait with a good edition full of interesting content. So, what are we going to talk about today, you may be asking? Well, I can give you that information. We're going to be talking about the Western and Eastern Conference Finals. After the Celtics 115-105 win over the Wizards in Game 7 of their semifinal series, we know that it is Cavs-Celtics. That series currently sits at 2-0 Cavs, and the Warriors-Spurs series out west currently sits at 3-0 to the Warriors. Those don't, of course, tell the full story of the series, though, and I'll try to paint a better picture of what has happened when I go more in-depth. We're also going to do a 49ers schedule preview, just based on who they're playing, what do we think their record will be. Hint, hint, it's not going to be good, but we'll talk about that, tell you all the games that we might be able to win and all the games that we're almost certainly going to lose. So, get ready for an epic edition of the Woodruff Report. This is your host, David Woodruff. Let's get going in 3, 2, 1. 2-0, dos a cero. That is the score of the Eastern Conference Finals right now, with the Cavs having beaten the Celtics in Game 1 and absolutely destroyed them in Game 2. So they've taken both of the games in Boston. The series will now shift to Cleveland, and it looks as though every indication points to a sweep. Isaiah Thomas has been ruled out for the rest of the playoffs from injuries suffered in Game 2 of the Cavaliers series. It was a hip injury that he re-aggravated. He had initially injured it in a March 15th game against the Timberwolves. He'd aggravated the hip, and now he re-aggravated it today. In Game 2. So he is out for the remainder of the playoffs, and it looks as though if they were going to steal a game from this series, it would need to be a heroic effort from Isaiah Thomas. So the brooms are really coming out in Cleveland. The Celtics look as though they're going to be swept. They don't really have any weapons that can counter LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and all the rest. So what has happened so far in the series? Well, in Game 1, Cleveland asserted their dominance. The big story of the game was that Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and LeBron James combined for 70 points. The Cavs led by 22 at halftime. And don't forget about big leads at halftime, because they become a major storyline in Game 2 as well. Besides Cleveland's big three, Tristan Thompson helped with 20 points, and of course his hard work on the glass, rebounds. He is a very integral part of that team. So the LeBron, Kyrie, Kevin Love show with some support from Tristan Thompson was more than enough to beat a struggling Celtics team. On the Boston side of the ball, they were not able to keep up with the Cleveland offense despite shooting about 46% as a team from the floor. Isaiah Thomas had 17, Jay Crowder had 21. But it wasn't enough to beat this superpower Cavs offense. So, moving on to Game 2, with the series at 1-0, the Celtics really needed to even this up, win one at home and at the Garden in front of their avid supporters, and not let this game be 2-0 going into Cleveland, where that crowd will be hyped, LeBron will be hyped, and it's tough to win an away playoff game in general. So with that in mind, the Celtics absolutely got the English language doesn't have enough words to describe the steamrolling that the Cavs gave the Celtics in Game 2. I mean, I am not playing around here. The Cavs were leading by 41 points at halftime. That is actually a skill for a team to be losing by 41 points at halftime. The Celtics only scored 13 points in the second quarter. This game was over pretty much from the opening tip-off. It wouldn't get any better in the second half, and the Celtics would end up losing by 44 in the game, but just an absolute obliteration. Biggest win for the Cavs in their playoff history, biggest halftime lead of any team in playoff history. This was just, it was bad. It was bad. It was tough to see in an Eastern Conference Finals for a team to be leading by 41 at halftime. It just goes to show you how the Warriors and Cavs are up in one echelon, the upper echelon, all-time great teams, and everyone else is kind of struggling to keep up. And when the Warriors or the Cavs are motivated, when they're not just going through the motions, they are so much more talented and so much better than every other team in the NBA. So the Celtics, it'll be tough to recover from that drumming that they succumbed to in game two, but we'll see if they can steal a game without Isaiah Thomas in Cleveland. This series sits at 2-0. Let's go out to the wild, wild west, where the Warriors lead the Spurs 3-0. And that is, of course, not the full story, because we've got to talk about the Kawhi Leonard Zaza Pachulia incident. So Kawhi Leonard injured his ankle against the Rockets in the Western Conference semifinals. He had to sit out the game. He had to sit out the game that the Spurs ultimately won to close out the series. And so it was still it wasn't 100% going into the Warriors series. So he injures it twice in quick succession. It was the third quarter where he injures it twice in quick succession. First, on a jump shot, he's going back to get on defense, and he steps on David Lee's foot. David Lee is sitting on the Spurs bench, so Leonard takes a fadeaway jumper, and as he's pivoting to get back on defense, he steps on David Lee's foot, twisting that ankle that was already injured. This caused him to go down in pain, and he couldn't even run back down the floor. He had to be taken out of the game, but they taped it up and he went back out there. But then he takes another fadeaway shot virtually from the same location. Zaza Pachulia is contesting, and as Zaza contests, his feet shuffle under Kawhi to where Kawhi is going to land, and his ankle lands on Zaza Pachulia's foot, and that the ankle cannot come back from that. He's out for the remainder of the game. He's out for game two and game three. And the Spurs were actually competing and beating the Warriors up to when Kawhi went out. As soon as Kawhi went out, the Warriors went on a huge run, erased the 2018-point lead that the Spurs had, and were able to win a thrilling 113-111 game one. So everyone's going to say that the Spurs could have beaten the Warriors had they had Kawhi. But that's not the way that it works. Injuries are part of the game. But I do want to talk about whether I think the Zaza Pachulia incident was intentional. And the NBA has called this an illegal play. You have to give a place for the player to land. So in that case, it was an illegal play. But it was so far from intentional, and really makes me angry how these talk show analysts are calling this a dirty play. Because if you watch the actual replay, Zaza Pachulia is watching the ball. He's watching the shot. He has no idea that his feet are going under where Kawhi's are, and it's ridiculous to think that he was intentionally trying to injure another player. This myth that other players try to injure each other it's just not true. No one tries to injure another player because they can sympathize with them. They also are trying to make money. They're also trying to keep their careers going as long as possible. No one ever would willingly try to injure another player. So Zaza maybe made a mistake. Kawhi was fading away, so Zaza Pachulia kind of jumped towards him to try to block the ball, because when someone's fading away, you need to get closer to the ball. The whole point of the fadeaway jumper is to make more space for yourself. So as Zaza tried to contest the fadeaway, his feet got in Kawhi's landing zone. And unintentional, he wasn't even looking at the ball. It's sad to see that Kawhi came down in the exact wrong place, right on his foot, and messed up that same ankle that had been taking so much damage the past few games. But it's absolutely ridiculous to call this a dirty play. You cannot call Zaza a dirty player based on this. You can look at some of the other, like when Greg Popovich went on his rant about how it was an intentional and dirty play. He points to the previous things that Zaza Pachulia had. He has a kind of a history of quote-unquote dirty plays. But I think Pop was just a little salty after that L that they took after winning, after having led by 20 or so points, even at times more than 20 points. He was just a little salty. He needs to go to a desalinization plant to take away that salt, because he's angry that he knows his team is going to get swept now. And that was proven in Game 2, when the Warriors, similar to the Cavs, absolutely annihilated the Spurs. Hold on, actually, let's go back and tell you some of the stats from Game 1. Kawhi had 28, LaMarcus Aldridge had 26 for San Antonio on the Golden State side of the ball. Stephen Curry had 40 points, and Kevin Durant had 34. Zaza Pachulia chipped in with 11 himself, and the Warriors were able to escape Game 1 with a 2-point lead. So, going into Game 2, as I stated previously, Kawhi ruled out with the ankle injury, and from the get-go, this game was very similar to the Cavaliers-Celtics game 2, which the Cavaliers absolutely annihilated the Celtics in. But right out of the gate, the Warriors just took control of this game and never looked back. The Warriors were leading by 28 at halftime, and they came out very strong in the first quarter, especially taking control of the game. For the victorious Golden State Warriors, Steph Curry had 29 points. He also had 7 rebounds and 7 assists. Kevin Durant had 16 points, and Draymond Green helped out with 13 points. And the Warriors were able to win this game easily by a score of 136 to 100. So going into Game 3, as the series shifted to San Antonio, there were question marks over, well, whether Kawhi would play. He was ultimately ruled out for Game 3. And with the series at 2-0, the Spurs knew that they probably had to win both of their games at home in front of their home crowd, Go Spurs Go, to win, have any chance at beating the mighty Warriors and winning this series. But the Warriors were able to hang with them the whole game and made a run in about the third quarter, never looked back, were able to win 120 to 108, and are comfortably 3-0 ahead in this series. For Golden State, Kevin Durant had 33 points, Steph Curry had 19, I should say, and Klay Thompson had 17. On the Spurs side of the ball, Manu Ginobili turned back the clock and had 21. LaMarcus Aldridge had 18. It was ultimately not enough to beat the Warriors. So 3-0 Warriors over Spurs, 2-0 Cavs over Celtics, and it looks like the inevitable third round Cavs-Warriors will occur in this year's finals. I'm not complaining. I want to see that matchup, especially with Kevin Durant now on the Warriors. It's going to be insane. And I think all basketball fans should be excited. When you have a rivalry where the two same teams are playing each other in 3 straight finals, it makes for some bad blood. And I definitely think, especially with like Draymond Green on the Warriors, there will be some altercations, at least one or two, in a potential Cavs-Warriors finals. But don't get ahead of myself. I shouldn't get ahead of myself, because the finals is not set yet, and there could be a miraculous turnaround. But let's shift our focus away from the NBA and to the San Francisco 49ers. After the draft, the schedule has come out, and it's an interesting schedule. So the league pairs you with two different conferences in which you play each team from that conference. So besides the NFC West, this year the 49ers will be playing the AFC South. That is the division containing the Jaguars, Titans, Colts, and Texans. And they will also be facing the NFC East. That is the famous division with the Redskins, Cowboys, Eagles, and New York Giants. So the NFC East is going to be rough. I mean, realistically, you don't see the 49ers winning any of those games. But the AFC South is kind of nice. That's been the worst division in football these last few years. And it's an opportunity to get some dubs on a schedule that doesn't really have many prospective dubs for the Niners. So let's get right into it. We start at home against the Carolina Panthers. Now, the Carolina Panthers had a down year last year, but they did have Cam Newton, and they do have Cam Newton. They continue to have Cam Newton, and many experts are predicting a bounce-back year for them. Last year, the 49ers played the Panthers, and actually, that was a game in Carolina, and actually performed pretty well. They were leading for a little bit of that game, but the Panthers were ultimately behind a great performance from Kelvin Benjamin, able to beat the 49ers. So this does look like a loss to start the year, but I think that the Niners can keep this game a lot closer than people think. This new D-line, Solomon Thomas, DeForest Buckner, Eric Armstead, should be good, and they're mobile, good players that could possibly keep Cam Newton in the pocket, which is always a key. The offense will have to score to be able to keep up with this Panthers team because they have a potent offense. You're not going to keep Cam Newton out of the end zone for a long time. And the Panthers defense will have enough power to shut down the 49ers. So I predict probably a 2-3 score loss in this opener against the Panthers. Game two, we travel to the Seattle to play NFC West Division, the Seattle Seahawks. And this game is certainly a loss because the Seahawks are the best team in this division again. They've got Russell Wilson. They've got that great defense that's still pretty much intact from last year. You have to play in Seattle, which is very difficult. That stadium's so loud. Those fans just give Seattle so much, and the 49ers have been pretty bad in recent years in Seattle. So it looks to be an 0-2 start this year after losses to Carolina and to Seattle. That game, I would give the Niners more of a chance if it was in San Francisco, but it's at Seattle. I don't see that game being very close. I see a blowout Seahawks win. So game three, we play at home against the Rams, and this is the first 49ers dub. Woohoo! Wee! Yeah! We won one. We're not going to go 0-16. So the 49ers will win this home game against the Rams. The Rams are pathetic. They have no offense whatsoever. They've got a new coach coming in, and the 49ers, ultimately, it's early enough in the season that Levi's Stadium will hopefully not be empty, so they'll get a little boost from that home crowd, and they'll have enough offensive firepower to beat the Rams in a game that will not be very fun to watch, but will ultimately get the job done. So, 1-2 through the first three games. The next game is at Arizona, and I actually see the 49ers pulling an upset in this game. Arizona is not at the peak of their powers. They're getting old. A lot of their players have been entering free agency lately. They're not the great team that they have been these last 3 or 4 years with Carson Palmer at the helm. So this game will come down to defense because both teams are going to struggle on offense. Who can make that play in clutch time? Who can get that clutch interception that gives the offense a short field to work with? And I see the 49ers being able to do that, being opportunistic and getting their first upset win of the season. So 2-2 through the first four games is how I predict, but they're going on a tough road trip now against some of the NFC East opponents that I referred to earlier in this segment. The next game is in Indianapolis against the Colts. This game will ultimately be lost by the 49ers because Andrew Luck and the Colts are going to be very good this year. And they've been disappointing these last few years. I think this is the year that they break through. I think they're going to win that division, and they're not going to win it with an 8-8 record like some of the teams have been winning with these last few years. I mean, it's ridiculous how bad these records are that are winning this division. But I can't talk because a few years ago, the winner of the NFC West was like 8-8. I can't remember their exact record. That was when Mike Singletary was still the coach of the 49ers. So this game is ultimately an L because in Indianapolis, you've got an early start time, 10 a.m. And second game of a road trip coming off a good win against Arizona, and Andrew Luck is going to shred this defense. And even though that Indianapolis defense isn't strong, it will be good enough to beat a very weak 49ers O. So 2-3 after the loss to Indianapolis, 2-4 after their next game in Washington against a very good Washington Redskins team, who will be competing for that tough NFC East crown. All those teams are going to be very good next year. Washington is probably the worst of the NFC East teams, but they're still far better than the 49ers are. They've got a good quarterback in Kirk Cousins. They've got a good defense led by Josh Norman, and they will be able to shut down this 49ers offense. It's the third game of a road trip, another early start time, 10 a.m., and they will beat the 49ers to get them to 2-4 on the season through the first six games. Our next game is at home against the Dallas Cowboys. Very interesting. We haven't seen the Cowboys in a while in San Francisco. Dak Prescott, the new QB. It'll be interesting to see how he does in year two after his super first year. This is totally an unbelievably an L for the 49ers to bring them 2-5 on the season. The Cowboys are one of the best teams in the NFL. They have a crushing O-line again, and Ezekiel Elliott going against the worst rushing defense in the NFL. This is a good week to have Ezekiel Elliott in fantasy football because he's going to get 100, 150 yards easy on this week 49ers offense and the week 49ers defense, I should say. The Cowboys' defense isn't great. The 49ers' offense isn't great. So I think that'll stalemate, and the Cowboys will come out winning. There'll be a ton of Cowboys fans at Levi Stadium. So there'll probably be more Cowboys fans than 49ers fans there. So 2-5 after three straight losses. And it doesn't get any easier. Our next game is at Philadelphia, which is going to be another L to put us at 2-6, because the Eagles are very good with Carson Wentz, Alshon Jeffrey, their new addition. This is a very strong team, and one that will definitely challenge the Cowboys and Giants for this division. This game is going to be a lot closer than people think. I think the Eagles might like come into this one a little bit weak, soft, maybe expecting a pushover win, and the 49ers will play hard, but they're going to lose this game to go to 2-6 on the season, and they're going to lose. They're going to have lost all three games so far against the NFC East. Our next game is against the Cardinals, an NFC West opponent at home. This is going to be an L. The Cardinals will come out mad after the Niners win in Arizona and will beat the 49ers in this game. So things are not looking good after that 2-2 start. Right now we're sitting at 2-7, and it's not going to get any easier. Our next game is against one of the best teams in the NFL, the New York Giants. That'll put us at 2-8. And I mean, so before I talk about the Giants game, which will ultimately be an L, I don't expect much from this 49ers team. All I ask is that they play hard for their new coach, and that we see some, hopefully some people who can come into, who can become breakout stars. I see some people with potential who play hard every down against teams that will probably be more talented and better. But all I ask is that they play hard. This Giants game, I mean, the Giants have Odell, they have Brandon Marshall, they have Eli Manning, and the 49ers just don't have a very talented defense, and there's not much you can do when that happens. You just have to play hard and I think the 49ers will keep it close. I'm hoping that they'll keep it close. I don't want to see a ton of blowouts this year. That would just upset me. But 2-8 after the loss to the Giants of New York. Our next game is against the Seahawks again. That's going to be another loss, unfortunately, to put us at 2-9, because the Seahawks are underrated, and they always seem to play better when it's against the 49ers. The 49ers will keep it close because it's at Levi Stadium, but the Seahawks will come out of there with a win to go to sweep the 49ers this year and put the 49ers at 2-9 for the season. So sitting at 2-9, off a 7-game losing streak, the 49ers finally get a game they can win against the Chicago Bears. New quarterback Mitchell Trubisky, will he start, will he not? This Bears team is not very good whatsoever. We played the Bears last year and lost, actually. Kaepernick threw for like 3 yards total. It was a rough game. So 3-9 after a win against the Bears. Thank goodness it's a home game in the sunshine. Give the home fans something to cheer about and cheer me up, because it's going to be tough watching the 49ers lose again and again and again and again and again and again and again. So 3-9 after the win over the Bears. Our next three games come against AFC South opponents: Texans, Jaguars, and the Titans. So our first one is against the Texans, and I see the 49ers pulling a shock upset in this one, because the Texans just aren't that good. They have that great defense with Jadeveon Clowney, J.J. Watt, but I mean, the 49ers are going to get shut down by every defense they face this year, so it's going to be nothing new. And I think that they'll come up fired up after that win against the Bears, confident, and I think they can make it 4-9 and beat a Texans team that, after their, I'm not sure who their quarterback's going to be. It could be Deshaun Watson, who they traded up to pick in the draft. It could be one of their weird backups. They always seem to be starting like a perennial backup quarterback: Hoyer, Mallett, Savage, the list goes on and on. So yeah, I think the 49ers are going to pull a shock upset on this one, their second shock upset of the year after their win against the Cardinals, to go to 4-9. Their next game is at home against the Titans. This will be a loss because Marcus Mariota is a very good player, and this Titans team is a lot better than people give them credit for. I think when you say Titans, they think of that horrible product that's been on the field the last few years before this. But Mariota, they've got good weapons at wide receiver. They upgraded their corners in the draft. They picked my boy Adoree Jackson out of USC. This will put the 49ers at 4-10 after the loss. Next game is at home against the Jaguars. This is a win. 5-10. Although I am a fan of Blake Bortles, he's not been as good as he should have been these last few years. He's got good wide receivers, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, but this is a long flight for the Jaguars, all the way from Jacksonville to San Francisco. San Francisco coming off a loss to the Titans. I think they'll be confident they can beat this Jaguars team to go to 5-10. Then the finale versus the Rams, that's another win, because I think the Rams are pathetic and horrible. So 6-10 is my final schedule prediction for the San Francisco 49ers. You heard it here first, 6-10. So thank you for tuning into another edition of the Woodruff Report. I have been your host, David Woodruff. We talked about the Eastern and Western Conference Finals, and then we gave you a 49ers schedule preview. Please tune in next week. It will probably not be a Sunday edition, but it could be. So be patient, and I'll try to give you the best in sports content. Thanks for listening.